Blog Talk Radio.
Of Tool. Thank you, everybody, for joining us once again. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensburyRules.com. Soon to be joining me here on Queensbury Rules Radio is James Foley of Bad Hook. Actually, he's here right now. James!
Patrick, can you hear me?
Man, I can hear you, and I'm telling you, I feel like my parents just got divorced, dude. Mayweather's no longer with Golden Boys, no longer with Schaefer. Man, I'm bummed here.
Yeah, that is really, you know, it's probably too early to really figure out what that means, but it's tough.
I'm just hoping that at this point that I get two Christmases. You know, that's it. I'm just hoping that at this point I don't have to, like, spend 1 week with Golden Boy and then 1 week with Al Haymon and Schaefer and Floyd Mayweather. Because then I have to, like, you know, leave my homework at one house and fucking bring my toys from one house to another. I don't like that shit. I don't like it.
I hear you. I hear you, man. You know, now you'll have three families, right?
That's right. The boxing family and then those two families. It's, I don't know, whatever. I'm hoping something good comes out of it. Oh,
yeah,
buddy.
I think that, you know, it's probably not a bad thing, because some of the fighters that are left at Golden Boy that, you know, aren't with Al Haymon, will probably end up, you know, getting matched up against some of the top ranked guys. So I think it's going to create more fights than it prevents that weren't already, you know, not going to happen. But who knows, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty early to tell, like you said. I don't really know that I 100% grasp the big picture about what this means and what it's going to do. And I don't really know. I'm more of a kind of, you know, I can't really think all that long term with these types of things, and I don't really know all of the promotional and managerial ins and outs. I admit it. I'm just not, you know, I'm not really that up on that. Somebody who is up, actually, you know, Scott Crist, he, of course, stays up on that stuff. So does Tim Sarz. He stays pretty up on that stuff and writes about it pretty frequently. So anybody who's looking to, you know, really dive into that stuff should really see Bad Left Hook or Queensbury Rules, really.
Yeah, I don't know those guys. Sound good, though.
Yeah, they sound like a bunch of assholes, really, but whatever.
Well, shit, you know, it's just like... Well, I mean, it's an interesting thing to talk about, I guess. I mean, if, you know, are Haymon and Ellerby and Mayweather, are those guys equipped to just launch their own promotional thing right now, you know, that could put on major fights, the type of events that, you know, Golden Boy has been doing for years and that Top Rank does? It doesn't seem like it. And I guess the idea now is that since Schaefer is gone, you know, having the experience at Golden Boy, he would be the kind of guy who could maybe make that happen for them, because, you know, Mayweather Promotions, I've read, is not even licensed in Nevada, and I think the shows that it has promoted, it's been a co-promoter, and, you know, even if it was the main promoter on a couple of the showbox, you know, promoting a Friday night showbox that does a few hundred people is a lot different than doing a major pay-per-view event, you know, at the MGM Grand, headlined by Mayweather. So are they ready to just take that over? I don't know. I mean, the fact that Mayweather publicly dumped Golden Boy as soon as this news broke about Schaefer tells you that that's what their plan is. The thing that I'm, you know, interests me is, like, Schaefer doesn't really even need to be involved. You know, why do Ellerby and why do those guys need Schaefer? I guess just because of the experience that he's had. But go ahead.
Sorry, but I was just going to say that, you know, I remember I had asked that on a previous show, I wish I could remember which, but I remember I had asked one of our guests, I was like, what exactly does Richard Schaefer bring to the equation? Because I don't really understand it. I still don't really know. And I still don't really I mean, I get it. He helped Golden Boy become what it is right now. I mean, but at the same time, I'm just not really fully grasping what, like, who he is. Like, what does he do that's so quintessential?
The former Swiss banker.
The Golden, yeah.
Tells you a lot.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm sure he brings money and chocolate and shit, but, you know, I don't know.
Well, I think he brings the business acumen, you know, but ostensibly that's what he brings. But you know what? I mean, as from a fan's perspective, in light of the climate that we've had, where there's been a lot of big fights that haven't been made, and it hasn't been good for the sport. You know, I'm sorry, but I look at a guy like Oscar, who fought his career making those huge fights happen, you know, and went out there and took on great challenges and really made a superstar out of Floyd Mayweather, made a star out of Manny Pacquiao, giving them the chance to win, you know, take the fight with, you know, at the time, the box office star. And I look at him and I look at the way he fought his career, and I want somebody with that attitude and philosophy to be matchmaking. You know, I understand business-wise, maybe it doesn't make sense, but I'm looking at it like, you know, these guys, the fighters and everything, I mean, obviously they sacrifice probably more than any other athlete, you know. And from a fan's perspective, I mean, I look at Oscar, and I know he's a goofball and all that, but to me, he seems like somebody that the fighters could identify with more than Richard Schaefer, who just comes from the, you know, banking, finance. He used to be a Swiss banker. And, I'm not saying that the guy's, like, unethical or anything like that. I think he has done a good job in a lot of ways for Golden Boy, and I don't really have an opinion on him one way or the other. But I do think that more and more the indications have come that I think that he has steered the company in the direction of the kind of, you know, monopoly that they've created over at Showtime. I think he is somewhat responsible for that. And even if it ends up, you know, he's got duties to the company, but as a promoter, I think that, you know, long-term we'd be better off if they were working for everyone's best interests, you know, better the sport. And, you know, you make some compromises and maybe it you know, hurts your bottom line short-term, but I think it's better for everyone if all the promoters can work together when the fights demand it. And I think Oscar's willing to do that, you know, and he was willing to do that as a fighter, and hopefully, you know, he can, I mean, that's what he's been saying, and I don't have any reason to distrust him. I mean, I don't think he can do it by himself because I don't think he has any idea what he's doing business-wise, but I think Schaefer kind of got a little bit bigger than the company, you know? I mean, it's called Golden Boy, and when Floyd Mayweather is out there embarrassing De La Hoya saying, Golden Boy is Richard Schaefer. But you know what? Schaefer doesn't come from boxing. Schaefer's just a Swiss banker. You know, I mean, he's just a guy trying to make some money. And by the way, bankers make a lot of fucking money, probably more money than the CEO of Golden Boy Promotion. So if he was such a great banker, you know, how did he end up in boxing anyway? But that's another story. But you know what I mean? No, my whole thing is you know, Schaefer's a good businessman, but, you know, he's not – when he started taking the power and calling all the shots ahead of De La Hoya, who I think De La Hoya's heart is in the right place. You know, De La Hoya needs somebody who can work for him and, you know, I think follow his agenda and not try to just, you know, it's not always about, like, the short-term money. But, you know, as usual, I mean, like most issues, it's more complicated than just Schaefer's a good guy or a bad guy or whatever. Schaefer did a lot of good stuff. I mean, the you know, Mayweather-Canelo card with Garcia and Matisse, I think that was largely Richard Schaefer's production. And, you know, obviously that was a great event for the sport. So there's good and bad, but I like Oscar's, you know, stated philosophy is a good thing, and if he can find somebody to help him implement that, you know, even with the talent that he'll have left, I think Golden Boy can still be a really viable entity, and we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens with the Heyman, Mayweather, whatever promotional company comes out of that. They have some good fighters, but I don't think it's as deep as people think, you know?
Well, I do think that Oscar De La Hoya's heart probably is in the right place, the right place being right in the middle of a bowl of cocaine. But just to play devil's advocate, though, I mean, I don't really even disagree with a whole lot of what you're saying. But I did read right when this stuff was kind of breaking yesterday. Of course, you know, I just happened to be out and about, you know, living my life and doing non-boxing things, which is, I know, strange, but I was at the zoo, and so I kind of, I know, it's fucking weird, but I was at the world famous San Diego Zoo with my wife and daughter.
Did you have the sound on in your real life? Did you have the sound on?
No. I live my life with the sound off, so I get the full experience. So I know what's coming at me. But we're fucking dumb. I basically had seen that the news broke, and the first story that I saw about it was Dan Raphael's story. Because I missed the first surge of stories, and I saw Dan Raphael's story about Floyd Mayweather dropping Golden Boy. I was like, whoa, wait, what happened? So I had kind of gone back and looked, and I was like, holy shit. So when I had read through that, there were a couple snippets in there with Leonard Ellerbe saying that he had never seen Oscar De La Hoya at any of the, financial type of meetings and stuff like that. And, I don't even know how true that is. And it, just, again, kind of play devil's advocate, Oscar De La Hoya is probably more of a figurehead of the company rather than an actual decision maker, although at the end of the day, he probably does have a good chunk of say, needless to say. But, it's kind of tough to really say exactly what it means. It's tough to really say exactly. I don't know that Oscar De La Hoya's head is in the right place just because of the drug issues and alcohol issues that he's had. And, I'm not trying to, kick a guy while he's down. I'm honestly not. But, I just kind of have to question some of the decisions because of that. And I think that Richard Schaefer maybe brought a more grounded perspective in terms of how they make money. And also, just as a really quick last little part, I do think that it was kind of low rent, and it has been kind of bullshit from Oscar De La Hoya's perspective that he continuously talks shit about Floyd Mayweather when he's very clearly making money off of Floyd Mayweather at the same time. I think that's kind of weak. Anyway, that's pretty much all I wanted to say.
That's true. But, it's not like Floyd was being the biggest gentleman with Oscar either. They both kind of gone back and forth. Look, if you and I had a business and our two candidates we wanted to run that business were Richard Schaefer or Oscar De La Hoya, of course we're going to hire Schaefer. But in this situation, it's not rocket science. I just feel like if Oscar could get with a guy who knew the economics and knew the business side of it and just tell him, hey, this is my company, as president of the company, I just want to make the best fights. I want, if Nonito Donaire is the best opponent for Abner Mares, let's make it happen. Just tell me how I can make that happen and financially. I think his philosophy can still influence the direction of the company without him having to be the day-to-day guy, being at those meetings. But,
No, I agree.
At the end of the day, the relationships go over, obviously, and we'll see if Schaefer winds up with, Mayweather and those guys. But, from those guys, why do those guys need Richard Schaefer?
That's what I don't really understand.
CEO of Mayweather promotion. I remember this one time I was making fun of Ellerbe on the one of the Bad Left Hook on the site, and I was just joking around, and then some guy was like, "How dare you?" I was just joking around, basically saying that Ellerbe is kind of rides Mayweather's coattails to an extent, and is fortunate that he has this guy in his life to provide him with employment. Right, and this guy was like, "What are you talking about? Ellerbe is the CEO of Mayweather Promotions." I needed to respect that title. Well, if he's the CEO of Mayweather Promotions, why do we need Richard Schaefer? Somewhat serious, right? Prior to coming to Golden Boy, he never had any experience in boxing.
Does Richard Schaefer even have Leonard Ellerbe's pecs, bro? Does he even fucking listen to Drake?
I don't know what he does, because to me he just seemed, he just always came off as kind of a slick, boxing, exactly what you would imagine a Swiss banker who became a boxing promoter.
Yeah, just less coated with chocolate.
But that said, you compare him to some of his peers like Don King, Schaefer's never killed anyone, so.
That's true. You actually kind of touched on, before we started the show, and we'll get to all the recapping and previewing and stuff like that, but real quick since we're here, before we started the show, one of the friends of the show, Michael Gallegos, who goes by on Twitter at Gallegos with the L's being capital I's instead of L's. Okay, that was a lot of explaining. point is, he had asked a question, or actually he had kind of asked a two- or three-part question, and you had brought some of that up a couple minutes ago. And basically what he had asked was, part one is, since Floyd has no promoter's license in Nevada, who is he going to work with for his September fight? And does it kind of take Maidana out of the running then? And then the second part is, or the third part, whatever, also does this move with Schaefer and Mayweather splitting from Golden Boy, does it bring fighters like Sean Porter and fighters like that to the forefront as potential Floyd opponents since they work with Al Haymon?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, is Amir Khan, he's not with Al Haymon, right? And I think I read Maidana.
I honestly don't even know who is. I don't even know who is anymore, exactly. The stable's
the
so deep that I can't even. Yeah.
Right. The whole thing's kind of a mess, and there's a lot of different, like, intricacies to it. And one guy who's talked about it a little bit is our friend Linus Esquire on Twitter. But, you know, one of the other things here is, like, a lot of these guys, the question now is, like, well, what kind of contracts do they have with Golden Boy? Are there fighters who are signed with Al Haymon but still, you know, are under contract that they have to fight, you know, on Golden Boy cards for the next couple of fights? And the thing is that, like, if Schaefer somehow had maneuvered with Haymon to kind of, you know, act against the interest of Golden Boy while he was the CEO, meaning that, like, if he encouraged those guys to kind of sign these management contracts and not sign contracts with Golden Boy, I mean, it could just open up a whole bunch of legal issues as far as, like, Schaefer, you know, I mean, Schaefer could be potentially, who knows? You know, I mean, we don't know any of this stuff, so we shouldn't even throw out, like, these kind of, but the point is that there's going to be a lot of really messy scenarios going on as far as who is still with Golden Boy and who can just jump ship, and I imagine it's going to be pretty sticky, and I don't think, I mean, I know Floyd Mayweather, well-known, you know, he doesn't have a contract with Golden Boy. Great, you can go, he can go and fight whoever, wherever, but I think a lot of these guys, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, and actually somebody else who is also brought a few of those legal type of issues up. I'm not going to lie. I'm not trying to badmouth a dude. I just don't really read a lot from him anymore as Kevin Ioli, but he has talked a little bit about the, you know, potential legal ramifications of all this going down too. So yeah. And our buddy, John Monaghan, Linus ESQ, he's a smart dude and he's also an attorney. So he kind of has a decent grasp of this stuff too. So those are two guys to look towards, I guess, if anybody's really looking into that. But it is going to have some effect. What that is, I don't really think that's totally clear yet. And what I'm hoping is, not what Tim Starks, our good buddy, had said in his piece last night about it, which was that he basically thinks that now this is going to create a different type of division, which is going to be, you know, Golden Boy and Oscar De La Hoya working with Top Rank and Bob Arum now, and then, you know, but not working with Al Haymon, Richard Schaefer, and I don't know, whatever promotional entity that winds up becoming Mayweather Promotions or whatever. I hope that's not the case, because then that's just going to make it, you know, all the more stupid. But that's probably what's going to happen.
Well, it all depends. I mean, yeah, you're right. But at the same time, you know, do they have enough? I mean, we don't know anything about, like, what is Al Haymon's deal? You know, aside from just, like, the mysterious, like, you know, power broker, and he was in the music industry, and now he's signing all these boxers. I mean, does he have interest in becoming a boxing promoter? Or why does he need to get, like, another guy? Like, why do they need to get Richard Schaefer to, you know, or Mayweather Promotions? You know what I mean? Like, it's just so murky. Like, they have to found some other promotional company, right? And I mean, it would be smart for Mayweather to try to make what Mayweather Promotions into a big thing, because, you know, you look at the success that Golden Boy's had, although according to our friend Rick Glaser, Golden Boy hasn't turned a profit in ever, which is weird. but you know what I mean? Like, I mean, Golden Boy appears to be a very successful company involved in some of the biggest, you know, promotions in the sport, and probably maybe it was even Eclipse Top Rank, you know, so it's just, I don't know, you know, I mean, it makes sense that Mayweather would want to, you know, parlay his, you know, success as a boxer into promoting, because, I mean, it's the thing that he knows, you know, so it's just a question of, like, how many, you know, legally, how many guys do they have, and what can they, what, what kind of shows can they put on with who they have signed?
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know. I really don't know. I guess
I know
we'll have to wait and see how that plays out.
Boxers, well, I know that Mayweather is really well-liked among boxers for the most part. I think a lot of guys look up to him, consider him the best fighter, and respect him. And I think he's a much different person than he sometimes appears on TV. So I do think that he's well-liked and respected, and that he would be, somebody that fighters would gravitate towards and maybe want to be part of something, maybe even more than De La Hoya, who I think is more polarizing, Obviously, Mayweather is black, De La Hoya, Mexican-American. I mean, I don't know if that plays into kind of what types of fighters would want to work with them or whatever, but they've both had experience on the highest level as, legitimate A-side pay-per-view superstars, and for them to, isn't it fascinating? 2007, they fight each other, and it's the biggest fight in the history of the sport, and now, 5 to 10 years later, they could end up on the opposite side of the biggest, promotional Cold War as the promoters.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Weird.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. I just hope that whatever happens, it's at least good for the sport. Even if that's only short term, I hope it's good for the sport. That's it. Let's get into the recapping real quick, I guess.
Just say one thing, at least Oscar is saying the right thing.
Yeah,
Oscar saying
true.
I want to make these big fights is better to me than Floyd, releasing a statement dumping Golden Boy and just going out on his own. I respect the message of De La Hoya and Golden Boy, but I want to see how it plays out.
Well, and it seems so strange to me that, these large factions of that whole issue seem okay limiting the potential money they can make. That's essentially what any type of division or split or Cold War, whatever you want to call it, does. That it limits their money because it limits the matchups they can make. So to me, if I'm a businessman, and I'm not, but if I'm a businessman and I'm invested in this, I'd be like, what the fuck are you guys doing? There's a whole, a third of boxing is over here and that you're basically saying I won't touch. So what the fuck are you doing? And make nice and make some money for me, if I'm a stockholder or whatever. But I don't really totally understand, the mindset. Obviously, it's to make money, but I don't really get it. Anyway, Carl Froch, he's kind of a badass, a little bit of a badass. He's got a hot wife, and he knocked the shit out of George Groves the other night. So I actually didn't wind up getting to see it live. Did you see it live?
I did. You didn't watch it live?
I was fucking working. Fuck.
Dude, boxing takes priority over anything. Everything.
I know. Even my family. Yeah. How great was
as
that
punishment,
shit live,
you can't,
anyway?
You can't use the boxing head hashtag for a month.
Can I at least use the boxing heads with the Z on the end?
Yeah, you can use that.
All right. That's a good compromise.
It was pretty cool. Huge punch. Great knockout.
Yeah, that shit was brutal.
I don't want to be the old, look, it was awesome, okay? Great atmosphere for a fight. Incredible crowd that they drew. It was a huge event. And Frost, he ended it in a really memorable, exciting way. I mean, it was just, an awesome knockout. Probably knockout of the year, in my opinion, when you factor in kind of the magnitude of the event. I think that it's been somewhat hyperbolic praise for Frotch in the aftermath of this. And, I love Frotch. I mean, I respect the hell out of the schedule that he's fought. I think he's had some really good wins. I think he's a really, really good fighter. He's, definitively the number two guy in the division behind Andre Ward for the past few years, and he probably does, he deserves a rematch with Ward, I think, more than any other fighter at 68 deserves to fight Ward. But all that said, I'm still kind of on the fence with some of the, Frotch. He's a Hall of Famer. He's the greatest British fighter of all time. You know, he's which I know most people aren't going the second one. That was kind of, you know, an extreme reaction. But
yeah, you're making shit up now.
No, somebody somewhere was touting him. He's among the greatest British fighters of all time, and I don't believe that he is.
If
you're talking about like handful, like three or four, I don't think so. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but look. I mean, I don't want to crap on a guy after he just had a great, great win. But the thing is, Groves never fought anybody on a world-class level before Frosch. I mean, his best – who was the best fight? De Gale, when they were both young, kind of up-and-coming contenders. Maybe Glenn Johnson, who was way past prime when he fought Groves. But, you know, these two fights don't really make him a greater fighter than he was before. I mean, I think the win over Kessler was big, even though Kessler was kind of on the downtick. And, you know, the win over Boutte was huge because Boutte had never lost before. But going back, I mean, let's not forget, I mean, Calzaghe dominated a prime version of Kessler, who then beat Frotch. I know it was a close fight, but so I can't rank Frotch ahead of Calzaghe. I just can't. I can't do that. And then you talk about, like, Lennox Lewis, other great British fighters. I think we're getting caught up in how great of an event that this was, and that is a testament to Frotch. And I love the guy to death. Definitely, but I'm not going to put him on my pound for pound list. I'm not going to, and I thought when people had him in the top 10 pound for pound, I think that was kind of a stretch. I mean, I respect what he's doing, but the point is, like, he's not the best guy in his division. He already come up short once with that. No one would pick him to beat Ward in a rematch. And I don't, and, you know, and like I was having this argument on Twitter the other day, I think Ward has also kind of become slightly overrated because ultimately, best wins, Chad Dawson, draining himself to 68, and, you know, again, it's Chad Dawson. I mean, it's not, he's not really a great elite, you know, all-time fighter. It's like Bradley Edwards said on Twitter, our boy that we were talking about it with, you know. He's never beaten a Calzaghe, an RJ, or a Tony at 68. He hasn't beaten a great fighter in his division. I'm talking about Andre Ward. Carl Frosch is probably Ward's best win now, I would say. And, you know, Kessler was a good win. I think Calzaghe beat Kessler a little bit cleaner than Ward did. But, you know, he's got very good wins, and he deserves to be a pound-for-pound guy. But am I talking about him, you know, as an all-time great? I don't think he's there yet. And when people dismiss, like, anyone's chance, like, it's one thing that it annoys me already when people act like Floyd Mayweather. It's inconceivable that he would ever lose, right? But at least Mayweather's built this, you know, over a decade of fighting at the highest level of the sport, you know, and he's fought, like, countless guys who are, I think, on the similar level of Ward's opponents. Ward has like three good wins: Kessler, Frotch, and Dawson. And you know, Frotch gets better and better every day because he went out there and knocked out Boutte, and he's still fighting on a really high level. Frotch is probably a great, you know, really good, if not great, win. Dawson, I'm skeptical. Kessler was a really good win, yeah. But the idea that, you know, oh my God, Golovkin couldn't hang with Andre Ward, or, you know, if Ward went to light heavyweight, he'd be favored against Kovalev and all those guys. Like, yeah, but he's not unbeatable. You know, I don't think he's fought a truly special fighter, an equal, in their primes. And to me, that's what makes great fighters. You know, it's Roy Jones beating James Toney. It's meeting an equal and beating them. And I don't think that he has. And so, you know, Frotch, he's very good. And I have nothing but respect for him. But I don't think just because a guy has a big win that then you have to write an article, you know, putting him in some great historical context. Just say that, you know, hey, the guy fucking sold out Wembley Stadium. It was the most popular fight since the 30s, you know, and he knocked the guy out in one of the best knockouts of the year. But you don't need to keep, you know, taking it to, like, the most extreme level of hyperbole.
Well, I mean, I think that my issue, not with anything that you said necessarily, but my issue is more that, you know, okay, I'll try to put it in the simplest way so I don't ramble on too much, but I will take.
Well, so you go ahead.
I
went for fuck.
Yeah.
Too long.
Yeah. Well, I'll take a Carl Frotch over a Floyd Mayweather or an Andre Ward pretty much any day of the week. And the reason why is because too much of the careers of guys like Floyd Mayweather and Andre Ward, for examples, because you used them and they're quick examples and, you know, they're around now and they're easy to use. Too much of those guys' careers are predicated on, well, if they would have fought X, Y, or Z, then they would have won. if Andre Ward were to move up to light heavyweight and fight this guy and that guy, he'd be favored. But he's not doing that. He's not going to do that. He's constantly talking about who's going to come up to fight him. And when other fighters do that shit, they get, like, you know, railed. When it's Andre Ward, I mean, he's gotten a little bit more, you know, hatred or whatever the last year or so, especially since he's been a little more inactive and a little more douchebaggy and making shittier calls on HBO. All right, I just hate Andre Ward. But seriously, it's a little bit more difficult to stomach when it's when he's fighting very seldomly, and then when he does fight, many of the fights that he makes outside of that, like, super six, you know, type of territory have been subpar type of stuff. I mean, basically, if there's no challenges there for you, then go out and make a challenge. Go seek a challenge. Move up and wait, whatever the case it is. And the same type of things apply to Floyd. With Carl Froch, he's basically fought literally everybody there is to fight. And, I mean, when you fight like that, I think that he probably could have been slightly more active. But, you know, that's a pretty crazy schedule. Regardless, when you fight like that, I think that you're bound to lose sooner or later, and you're bound to, like, not look good every so often. When you fight once every 6 to 9 months, like a Floyd Mayweather or Andre Ward, and your fights are fairly, you know, specifically selected, then I think that you're much more likely to look really good and keep on to an undefeated type of record and, you know, have more money behind you, et cetera, et cetera. Regardless, I do feel what you're saying. I think that the more interesting, like, historical discussion, if we're getting into that briefly, is Carl Froch the best British super middleweight, or is he the best super middleweight ever? That's a more interesting discussion. I mean, I'm not entirely sure if I would pick him over a Calzaghe at this point, but he's up there. I'd have to say he's up there. Is he the best British fighter ever? Nah, I don't think so. But regardless, I respect the fuck out of the guy because he steps in there and he does everything he can. You know, he tries as hard as he can. He looked pretty shitty against Andre Durrell, but so did Andre Durrell. Andre Durrell looks pretty shitty, period, every time he steps into the ring. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I disagree with you somewhat, and I'm not trying to defend Ward, but, you know, Ward, he did clean out his division. I mean, he's fought everyone who has a belt at super middleweight. Ward's already beaten. So, I mean, he's beaten, I think, all of the challenges in his own division, and you got to give him some credit for that. My main contention is, like, how good of a division is it really? And I think Frost is very good, but that's my main bone to pick. And I agree with you as far as, like, you know, like fighting Chad Dawson. Go up to 72, 73, make a catchweight. Fight for the lineal championship. You know, Ward's a better fighter than Chad Dawson. I mean, go win that fight on somewhat even terms, and it's so much bigger for your legacy. Instead, spectacular. I mean, imagine if you went to 75 and knocked Dawson down three times and TKO'd him and became the light heavyweight. It would be a, you know, great win. And I don't think Dawson's, like, that great, but to do what no one else had ever done would be pretty impressive. But, you know, to have him come down to 68 and win under those circumstances, it's like we've seen weight-drained dudes who just can't keep their balance go down multiple times against guys who aren't big punchers. We've seen that before, you know, and it just obviously had such an impact on that fight. Not that it affected the winner, but how it played out, and it just felt like kind of a farce, you know. But that said, I mean, I don't want to diminish Frosch. I mean, it's awesome that he's doing what he's doing, and I'm really glad that he's making this kind of money, and I love seeing him interviewed. I think, you know, you got to give him props for, you know, he's an exciting fighter to watch. He's fought tough competition. He's got super hot girlfriends. So, you know, I'm totally cool with him, but when you start saying, like, well, where does he rank on all-time super middleweights? Well, right now he's not the best in his own division in his own era, so he's not number one. I think Calzaghe, you have to rank ahead of him. And then if you talk about, you know, guys who didn't really, you know, accomplish that much, but just how good were they? I mean, Roy Jones at 168, you know, I mean, is Frosch in that league? You know, so, I mean, it's just, you know, we don't always have to look at it from the negative, but I just feel like sometimes the reaction to these kind of things gets so built up, you know. And that's what I thought was fascinating about this, is here we were in Wembley Stadium, 80,000 people, one of the biggest events. I mean, it will be the biggest live crowd this year for a fight. And let's be honestly, I mean, I'm not trying to diminish it, but it wasn't even a championship fight in reality because it was just two of the paper, you know, sanctioning body belts. But I'm sorry. I mean, I believe in one man per division, and the champion, unfortunately, is Andre Ward. So, you know, it's amazing that to me that this fight resonated and became so huge, and I think that's a part of the reason why everyone's going so overboard with their reactions to it. Because to me, it all comes back to how good is George Groves? And I know he looked really, really good in stretches of both of these fights, and I had him up 5-2 in this fight, you know, before the knockout. But on paper, let's look at his resume. What has he really accomplished? What will he do from here? And I think that'll be, you know, what does Groves go on to do from here? I'd love to see Groves in the Gale rematch. I mean, the Gale, I didn't see the fight, but I was really impressed to read that he, you know, stopped Brandon Gonzalez in the early rounds.
Well, before we move forward with that, do you want to go ahead and kick, you know, Mother Teresa in the vagina or anything?
No, but, you know, I mean, you've read Christopher Hitchens' The Missionary Position, right, where he did exactly that.
Yeah.
Not to offend anyone who's a fan of Mother Teresa, but there is a book that expresses some somewhat, you know, negative opinions
True.
Of her.
Yeah,
so it wouldn't be unthinkable.
Yeah,
that's, that's my point. But no, I don't want to kick anyone when they're down. I just want to point out that, like, we don't have to, you know, fucking anoint the winner of every single fight.
You're trying to rein in the hyperbole. I'm with you. Well, you mentioned it. So how good
wins,
do you think
Cotto
George
wins this weekend? It'll be that Cotto's the greatest Puerto Rican fighter of all time.
Oh, of course.
You know,
or if he's, or if he's not, then,
really,
you know, there will be a, there will definitely be an article about, you know, how he measures up against the Puerto Rican greats and shit like that. But, I mean, so you mentioned it, though. How good is George Groves? What's he going to go on to accomplish? What do you think?
Well, I think he's basically like a guy who fits in the you know, back side of kind of the top 10 at super middleweight. And that's, you know, that's where I think he was at prior to this fight, and that's kind of where I think he will be going forward. You know, he may end up, I don't know. I really don't know what he ends up doing, you know, because it's I can't ignore the fact that ultimately he got stopped in both fights, and I thought the first one, the stoppage was terrible. I did rewatch it, and I guess I kind of agree more with our boy Shep, who was on. But, yeah, I think the stoppage in the first fight was pretty fucking, you know, horrendous, considering. But here he got knocked out clean. I mean, he got stopped in both fights by Frotch. So where can I rank him? I mean, I'm not going to rank him immediately. You know, Andre Ward, Carl Frotch, and George Groves is the next best contender. I'm not going to do that just because he was co-headlining in an 80,000-person fight, you know? And you got to look at the paper. I mean, there's other guys. Like, I mean, if Kessler's active, is he ahead of Kessler? Is he ahead of Saki Obika? Is he, you know, I think he's in the back,
the
top 10. I mean,
if you're looking at his record literally, he's now has two stoppage losses in a row. I mean, yes, the first one was obviously questionable. But if I mean, you know, let's say 30 years from now, and I don't know, fucking wasteland world, no more box rec, and people are just looking at a page, and they're like, oh, George Groves, he got knocked out twice in a row by Carl Frotch. I know that's not the case, really, but still, but just looking at his record, that's the case. So he's going to have a little bit of a journey to come back and to kind of, you know, put his name back in the good graces of, well, I mean, I think he's going to have a fan base no matter what. I think that the fight probably proved that, but as far as, you know, opposition, deserving big fights, et cetera, he's got a little bit to go.
Well, I think that, you know, the exposure is going to help him get another good one. But I think, you know, I think that the Gale rematch, it just makes perfect sense. And I think, you know, I know our, like, Shepard is super high on the Gale, and a lot of other people are. And if the Gale turns out to, you know, be that guy, and I know the first fight was kind of controversial anyway, and a lot of people had the Gale beating Groves. So, I mean, if the Gale turns out to have a great career, that'll be always be a nice win that Groves has on his record, you know. And he's got the older Glenn Johnson, which is not, you know, Johnson had nothing in that fight, and the two losses to Frotch. But yeah, it's just kind of thin when you're talking about. I mean, you look at the guys Frotch has been in with over the last few years, Andre Ward, Kessler, you know, it's just the who's who of the best fighters in the division, and Groves had never faced anyone on that level. It just, you know, arguably like one of the weaker opponents of that stretch for Frotch was the older version of Glenn Johnson, and that was a better version of Johnson than what Groves had fought, you know? But he really, you know, he really benefited because of the first fight, because he really exceeded expectations, and he was, you know, dominating that fight until he kind of gassed out late, and then the bad stoppage.
Yeah, it's fair to say that Frotch has the better Johnson.
He does. That's probably, well, hey, he's got Rachel. I don't think we needed to go to Box Rec to, you know, settle that.
Yeah, for sure. It's the winning Johnson. I mean, it's, yeah, okay, yeah, I do think that I agree with you overall, and there was a little bit of a stretch of hyperbole, although I do think that, you know, just looking at Carl Froch's resume, it's tough to really say what the Groves fights mean just yet, because Groves still has a chunk of career in front of him, at least as far as we can tell. So, you know, I think
well,
that what
going,
he does
are you going
from
auto
this,
Hall of Fame, automatic Hall of Fame for Froch? Right now,
I don't know about automatic. I think that I don't know about automatic, but he'll definitely be on a ballot, and I think that he'll probably get in. I mean, it's kind of what hurts him is that he, you know, he doesn't have a whole, like, he doesn't really have a really heavy resume in terms of super high quality. But what, you know, will probably get him in, will almost assuredly get him in my opinion, is just that he did take on everybody. Win or lose, he did take on almost everybody. You know, he was even trying to lure Calzaghe back out, you know, not long after he had retired. But regardless, you know, that doesn't really mean anything. But, yeah, I think that he'll probably get in. Just the idea that he has taken on everybody is just something that I really appreciate, especially in this day and age where it's so easy to not do that. It's much easier to just kind of, you know, pull the wool over everybody's eyes and try to make some money, because people fall for that shit all the time. Happens, you know, all the fucking time. So, yeah, I just respect what he's been able to do. And I think that this result, I don't think there's any question that it's probably the front runner for knockout of the year.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, Frost has a lot of good wins on his resume. I guess the one detraction is that, you know, when he faced another great fighter or whatever with Andre Ward, you know, he pretty much got thoroughly outclassed by him.
Well, the three names that I had seen for potential Carl Froch, potential future Carl Froch fucking victims were Chavez Jr., James DeGale, and shit, who was the third one? Chavez Jr., James DeGale, and
Golovkin.
And so, I mean, of those three, I think that probably the most competitive fight and the one that I would want to see most is Chavez Jr., but I would take any of them.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, I still think DeGale, I think it's a better move to take the loser, you know, rematch Groves, settle that. That builds a lot more hype for a Frotch fight. You know, Chavez Jr. makes sense. I mean, he doesn't, like, deserve the fight, if we're talking, like, in those terms. But at the same time, I mean, yeah, he brings money and fan base, too. And I think people actually are kind of selling Jr. chances short. If you actually get a, you know, motivated, decent version of him, you know, I think he gives Frotch a pretty tough fight, just in terms of activity and with his Channing coming forward. I don't think that's necessarily an easy night for Frotch, because, you know, I think at 37, 38 years old, even against Groves at times, I mean, there were stretches he did not look great. And I know it's easy to kind of look back and say, well, he was setting him up the whole time. And, you know, he was hitting him with those body shots early, and I think those took a toll and eventually, you know, helped with the knockout. But, you know, against a fighter with a lot of activity like Chavez, I think it can be a really interesting fight. And then Golovkin, I mean, I would love to see that, because I think that really proves a lot about, you know, I don't think Frotch has anything left to prove. I mean, I think he's, you know, I mean, as much as I criticized him, yeah, he probably ends up going to the Hall of Fame, because he has been, you know, one of the best in his weight for years. He's fought a really tough list of opponents, and now that he's getting this late career kind of popularity, that's always big too. I mean, the guy headlined basically the A-side, bringing two championship belts, even though not a lot of respect for them, but whatever, you know, to a fight that drew 80,000 people. So, yeah, he's probably going to be a Hall of Fame. He's a really good fighter. But you know, I don't think at this point in his career he has anything left to prove. But I think for Golovkin, he's got a ton, because he hasn't been able to get any of the best middleweights in there with him. and to just jump right up and fight the guy who's like, you know, not like, oh, he might be the number one guy. I mean, no, you know, Ward has cleaned out the division. Frotch has basically beaten every other ranked fighter in the division behind Ward. So he's a clear number one contender. And to go up and fight him, if Golovkin could win that fight, especially in a kind of spectacular way that he's won his fights against the middleweights, I mean, that would really get the drumbeat going for Andre Ward Golovkin to be, or, you know, really special fight.
Yeah, no question.
And I don't think, I did think it was weird when Max said that Golovkin would be a substantial favorite over Frotch, just because, you know, you figure Frotch is the bigger man, he's competed at a really high level, he's fought way better competition, and Golovkin's so unproven, and he's never fought at the weight, you know, at 168, and you figure that it would probably be, I mean, maybe they could do it in Vegas, but it might make more sense in, you know, in England, where Frotch would have the home advantage, too. So I think to call Golovkin a substantial favorite, that's kind of a maybe a stretch. But, yeah, personally, I do think Golovkin would win that fight.
I don't even know. I would love to see what happens, because it's basically putting the kind of slow tide that is Carl Frotch up against the fucking wrecking ball shore break that is Gennady Golovkin. I don't know. Is that a pretty good ocean metaphor? I don't know. I tried. But, yeah, that's just that kind of that style. I mean, it's got to be some fireworks sooner or later. Carl Frost doesn't have real great defense. Gennady Golovkin likes to hit fucking hard. So, yeah, that would probably be a damn good fight, and it would probably be a test of Gennady Golovkin's chin, too, which is what a lot of people are looking for. So, yeah, needless to say, I'd love to see that fight. Let's see.
It'd be great.
Well, since we might wind up ending...
significant step up from, you know, whoever Golovkin's best opponent. If it was Matthew Macklin, he would probably have the highest ranking. I mean, Frotch is just overall better fighter, bigger. I mean, every advantage that you could imagine, and is riding, you know, a huge wave of confidence. So to act like Golovkin can just easily move up to 68, you know, and handle Frotch, I thought it was kind of a... Even though I personally think that he has that ability, you know, I think to just announce that, oh, you know, that's... he would be out of Frotch's class. That's a little premature, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, it's a bit rich at this point. But since we might wind up ending the show a little bit early, I figured we'd jump right over to Nonito Donaire. Well, everybody keeps calling him Donaire, and he hasn't been correcting him. I'd initially, whatever, doesn't really fucking matter. Point is, he wound up winning a belt against Simpiwe Betieka in Macau, which was basically the televised co-feature of Frosh Groves 2. It was tape delayed and whatever. I missed that live, but I had seen some of what had happened, and I fully caught up to it later. Did that look as shady to you as it seemed to me and many other people?
Gotta be honest, man. Like, I know, not. I mean, yeah, it's obvious what they did, sure. But at the same time, I mean, you can't deny that Donaire had a pretty bad cut from the headbutt. And personally, I thought Donaire won the fight. A lot of people were giving Vetyetka the first two rounds, maybe. But, you know, I mean, I actually think Donaire could have won one of those rounds or both of those rounds. I thought they were both close. I thought Donaire looked decent, looked sharp enough, and then, you know, hit him with, obviously, the...
What's that?
No, like it was similar to what they did against Orlando Salido, where they were just kind of like, you know, okay, we're ahead, we can end the fight now, you know, and just win on points. And that's, I guess, a little bit cheap, but I don't have any reason to, like, jump down Donaire's throat over this. I mean, he looked like he had a really bad cut. I thought he was eloquent in explaining why he felt like he was at a disadvantage and didn't want to continue, and he offered the guy a rematch, even though, in my mind, I think he was on his way to outclassing and probably knocking him out if he hadn't taken those head, you know, cuts. So I just didn't understand why.
Well,
everyone's
I guess
so quick to, like, knock Donaire down. I don't know.
Well, I've never really been a big fan of his. I mean, I've never really hated him either, but I've never really been a big fan regardless. The two, I guess, points of contention I would have would be that it wasn't even really clear on a replay where exactly the cut started, because it looked like there was – well, yeah, because there were two punches, and then it looked like there was a forearm slash elbow, like accidental, and then a headbutt literally like immediately after that. If we're going to, like, take odds, it was probably the headbutt, because that's the thing that's probably most likely to cause a cut like that. But the issue, I think, for a lot of people, myself included, was that it wasn't ruled what it was that caused the cut. And then on top of that, it seemed as though Nonito just kept getting, like, the benefit of the doubt as far as what he was able to do. Like, he kept turning around and taking a break, basically. And so, I mean, I get that you're cut, and it might have even been from a butt and all that type of stuff, but it just seemed that the way that he was getting favored, which is not necessarily, I guess, illegal, and it happens all the time in boxing, but the way that he was getting favored was pretty, like, blatant. It was pretty overt. It wasn't really in any way implied like it usually is. I mean, it just seemed to me like it was kind of obvious. Past that, I didn't really think that Vetieka was all that hurt from the knockdown. I mean, he obviously got knocked down, but on the replay, it also looked like their feet tangled up a little bit, and he kind of looked like he fell backwards as well. Was he on his way to losing? Yeah, it probably kind of looked like it was.
Well, I mean,
but just the way
boxing,
that it ended, it was so weird.
Well, did you think Vetieka was really accomplishing anything in terms of the boxing? Because I just didn't think he was doing much. I mean, if you eked him the first couple of rounds, maybe, but I didn't think he was really troubling Dinair. And, I mean, it's just hard to – it's just.
I don't know that I would be quick to give him – like, you know, it seemed like there were a lot of consensus, you know, let's give him the first round or first two rounds. And I don't know that I would be super quick to give him, you know, any of the rounds, really. But at the same time, there were moments where he was pushing Nonito back to the ropes, and Nonito did not like that shit, partially because of the headbutts and everything. But also, when I was rewatching it, it seemed to me that a lot of the headbutts were coming from, you know, Nonito looked like straight up scared, like freaked out every time his back hit the ropes. And it might have been because of the headbutts. It might have been like, you know, his back hit the ropes, and he's like, oh, shit, here comes a headbutt. But the problem was he was then reaching out, like, to grab Vetieka and, like, clinch him, like, super hard. And then, of course, as a result of that and Vetieka's awkwardness, they were just going bang and, like, hitting heads every time. And so then I saw, like, one set of reactions that was like, oh, my God, Vetieka's so fucking dirty. This guy's headbutting him at every turn. And I'm just like, really, dude? That's not really what I saw. What I saw was, you know, an awkward guy fighting another dude who really looked like he didn't really want to be in the fight except for until that last round. And it was almost like Nonito picked it up in that last fourth round so if it did go to the cards, no problem. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's just everything about it seems so strange. I'm not going to, like, totally discredit his career or anything. It was just, it was weird.
Yeah, well, I think the whole, like, oh, let's start the fifth round and then just ring the bell, that was weird. But I guess on one hand, like, yeah, it shouldn't really just be at the fighter at the whim of, like, hey, you guys want to continue? No, I'm cool. I have a big lead on the cards. I'll just end the fight now. You know, I mean, there has to be some kind of standard where, like, the doctor or the referee or somebody can determine whether a fighter is able to continue or not. And if you are, you know, physically able to, that's just part of the deal. You have to go out there and fight. And so, I mean, I think you could argue that because it did look, just like in the Mikey Garcia situation, it looked as though it wasn't the doctor or the referee that's making that determination. It was basically the corner, which that's not really how it should work, you know. But that said, in both cases, I mean, there were bad injuries that were caused by fouls. And you can't deny that, you know, and it sucks because, like, I thought Salido was actually coming on a little bit late in that fight against Mikey Garcia. And I thought, now here, I thought that this was going to lead toward Dinair possibly getting another kind of spectacular knockout, but I thought, you know, Dinair looked decent. I wanted to see what was going to happen, and, you know, so I didn't think either fight, I wasn't, like, pleased that either fight ended early, but at the same time, I mean, both guys did have some somewhat gruesome injuries. Didn't come from punches, I don't think.
Yeah, you know,
That's, I think, more of the issue. It's not so much the cuts or anything for me. I mean, there was an obvious cut. He was clearly cut. It wasn't like, you know, that's in dispute, at least not for me. The way that everything unfolded was just so strange. It didn't really seem right. It didn't really feel right.
The fact that Robert Garcia basically acted as the referee and the ringside physician and the judges.
Yeah, it just seemed,
didn't seem fair.
Well, I mean, it at the very least, you know, getting away from the fight and then getting into, like, what it means for Noriko's career, now at least, and I'm not trying to just, like, be negative about it, but basically it seems to me as though the majority of fans seem to be waiting for Nonito Donaire to rematch Guillermo Rigondo. You know, that's just kind of, that seems to be the direction that most people want him to go in, you know, and, you know, understandably so. But with the Darchinian win, and then now this, it seems as though that's just kind of been blockaded again. It's, you know, now Nonito's talking about giving Vetieka a rematch, and it's like, all right, well, now I think at this point we can probably expect that rematch between Nonito and Rigondo to, like, never happen. I don't think that shit's ever going to happen, and I don't really think Nonito wants it to happen, understandably, too. But anyway, what do you think? Where do you think he goes from now? You think he's going to rematch Vetieka? Do you think he'll ever get back in with Rigondo?
Maybe get down with Abner Mares, a little Golden Boy, Cold War thing. Tender. I mean, I don't know.
Shit, I wanted that fight like 3 years ago.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, but these days it's like, if it's a fight we wanted 7 years ago, then we're happy to get it today. So 2 or 3 years ago, you should be fucking delighted if they make that.
No shit. No shit.
But, you know, man, like, I wanted Donaire to rematch Rigondo, but I wanted that for Donaire, or Donaire. You know, I wanted him to, like, want to be a great fighter and go and avenge him. Rigondo doesn't need it as far as, like, prestige. I mean, he won 10 out of 12 rounds. So, you know, if Donaire doesn't take that fight, then Rigondo is the superior guy. And he has other good, you know, Rigondo is probably going to get buried and never fight anybody decent now. But it would be nice if Rigondo could get some fights with, you know, there's other good fighters he could fight at 122. And Donaire sounds like he's going to be, I mean, now he's at featherweight. I don't know. I mean, there's good fights there, but I really have no idea. I was surprised that I was kind of surprised. I guess, well, this fight was maybe for that because there was that belt on the line. But this seemed like a weird fight. But, yeah, I would think that they would steer him either, you know, the Vetyetka rematch or against, like, maybe Gradovich, who was on the undercard, or one of the other, like, younger, you know, featherweight guys that Top Rank has.
You'll
never see Guillermo Rigondo on pay cable ever again.
Yeah, it's unfortunate too. I mean, there were actually some questions. I mean, obviously Rigondo is probably going to get buried in that equation just because it's going to be the easy thing to do, and he doesn't really, you know, it doesn't really do a whole lot as far as money for anybody. But anyway, I saw some talk from a few different sources that now in the minds of, you know, boxing fans, or in the kind of general consensus, that this whole Macau thing might be sour. Or, I mean, not officially, but as far as the view of holding fights in Macau, now, you know, after this, I don't know, there was a pretty strong reaction to this, whether it deserved it or not. So, anyway, what do you think? Do you think it does anything? Like, does it reflect badly on Macau that this Onaide, you know, Vetieka thing happened? And, I mean, the card itself was not horrible, but it wasn't really high profile for a card they're going to take all the way to Macau. Well, and especially since Donaide was headlining it, he seemed to be the one that they were pushing on this card, and didn't really end that well.
No, but, I mean, that's how boxing goes, you know. I think even though Pacquiao Rios wasn't really a great fight, I mean, it was a good exhibition from one of the best fighters in the world, and Pacquiao's a superstar, and that was a successful event. Not an American pay-per-view buys, but I think in Macau that was a good thing. And you know, you can't compare this to that, but yeah, it didn't seem like it really had you know, drew a great crowd, and it's probably not, you know, not good that it ended like that. But I'm just looking at the featherweight rankings here, because like we were talking about Daenerys fighter, and it reminded me that Nicholas Walters looks awesome, and you know, had knocked out Victor Chinian on the undercard, which was pretty you know, kind of surprising to me that he dominated him like that. So I think that would be a great opponent for Daenerys. And right, you know, between them and the rankings here is Gradovich. So I think any of those guys, you know, I'm sure that's got to be the plan, right? And then Vetyetka. And so, you know, outside of Johnny Gonzalez, Abner Mares, that's basically who's ranked here at featherweight. You know, and then you got Lomachenko and Gary Russell will figure into that. But so I would think that, you know, Daenerys' opponents will come from that same pool. Maybe they'll do, you know, a rematch with Vetyetka and hit Gradovich and Walters against each other. Actually, those are really good fights.
There's talk that, you know, Nonito versus Nicholas Walters is next, and I mean, I don't know that that's 1,000%. I don't know that that's 1,000% natural. But at the same time, you know, Nicholas Walters basically just totally destroyed a guy that Nonito had trouble with not that long ago. Significant trouble.
Yep.
I thought that he was down pretty solidly on the cards against Darchinian when he fought him. So, I mean, I don't know. Now with two knockout losses in a row, I'm not entirely – and I think he's, what, like 37. I don't know that Victor Darchinian is going to be going all that much farther in his career. Regardless, he was obviously a great fighter, and Nicholas Walters beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, Walters against Daenerys, I think, is a really good fight. And I think Daenerys would need to, you know, try to find his old form to, you know, to be in that one, based on how great that Walters has looked.
Yeah, I mean, that was solid stuff, man. I didn't really expect it to be like that. I don't know, maybe other people did. I didn't.
No, he seems like a really big guy for the weight, too.
Yeah, he's going to be a guy to watch, I think, especially right around that kind of like little weight range there, especially, you know, bringing up Gradovich, and that's a makeable fight and everything. It's interesting stuff. And, you know, bring out Lomachenko and a couple of those other guys that are in the mix. It's crazy shit.
Yeah, it's not bad, actually. You look at that picture, they could get a little situation like they have it at welterweight with like Bradley, Kravatnikov, Marquez, Pacquiao. Although a very poor man's version of that.
Yeah, well, that's still a nice little round robin, though.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, let's before we wind up having to jet out of here, let's move on and preview this Sergio Martinez versus Miguel Cotto bout. Now, let me ask you real quick: did Miguel Cotto's underwear bulge frighten you as much as it fucking did me?
I was disappointed, man, because I saw on Twitter people talking about it, and I thought it was going to be, like, actual full frontal nudity.
People
were just hyping up a bulge. So, yeah, a little let down
total
by
bulge,
that. But,
shit was pretty bulgy, though.
It was a solid bulge. It was a decent bulge. I don't know, man. These guys are, you know, it's kind of a strange... strange yet awesome matchup. You know, there was no real mandate for it, but I think it's just this Martinez and Cotto, it just kind of fits together. You know, I think it's really intriguing. Everything, you know, about this whole, I mean, I thought the 24/7 was good. I think the personalities clashed really well at the face-off. Cotto, I think, is coming off probably his most likable in a while, because he sometimes can be a little bit surly, but I think against with Martinez being this, like, you know, I don't know, man. It's I'm really looking for. I'm like pretty pumped up for it as a single fight.
I'll go ahead and put it like I'll go ahead and you know expand upon what you just said, and basically what has happened is, you know, even with Miguel Cotto sometimes being cantankerous, surly, whatever you want to call it, Martinez's diva antics have made him look like a straight bish, James.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, it's weird, man. Because like I've been a huge Sergio fan for a while, but I guess I never really like knew that much about his personality, you know. And against Chavez, it didn't bug me that much. In the I thought he was pretty straightforward, and I just thought that was a lot of fun, you know, their interactions in the face-off and then the 24/7. But I do think he's kind of become really unlikable in the way that he's talking about Cotto, because look, Cotto's giving this guy, you know, probably his career-high payday. You know, Miguel Cotto, he hasn't earned the fight by winning, you know, becoming the top contender at middleweight. I mean, he basically, you know, Cotto has effectively lost his last two fights against the real top level at 154. And now he's become the, you know, he's going to challenge for the middleweight title. But really, Cotto is giving Martinez this fight, you know, and giving him, like, this sold-out arena at Madison Square Garden and giving him this platform. And maybe it's a gamble that, you know, Cotto can, if he somehow wins, I mean, I think it's a huge upset. And, you know, yeah, it is historically significant, even though he didn't, you know, it's not like he basically just had to beat the hobbled champion, but that's all you really have to do is beat the champion to become it. And, you know, Cotto would be the legitimate middleweight champion of the world. I mean, it's insane. But I think Martinez should be fucking, you know, grateful, thankful that Miguel Cotto is giving him this fight. Because Martinez gets to fight, you know, make what will be, you know, if not his career-high payday, right up there, maybe with the Chavez fight. And he'll get to fight in front of, you know, a raucous arena in one of the historic venues against a guy who has lost his last two fights at the weight class beneath him. You know, and it's going to be a huge fight and a huge pay-per-view just because of how popular Cotto is. So I think to give Martinez that, you know, even though, of course, Cotto is doing it for his own reasons and he probably does believe he can win, I think Martinez should be a little bit more, you know, graceful.
Well, I mean, you know, he doesn't necessarily have to kiss Miguel Cotto's ass or anything like that. But, yeah, I mean, you bring up a really valid point. You know, obviously, Sergio Martinez, he's a very good fighter. He deserves recognition for being a good fighter, for being the lineal middleweight champion, the real middleweight champion. I'll repeat that a couple more times just because there seems to be some dispute as to who actually is the champion among some people at middleweight. Make no mistake, it's Sergio Martinez. He is the only champion at middleweight. Point is, you know, it's a very intriguing fight. And even though Sergio Martinez is a good fighter and blah, 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 there have been past, you know, instances, past fights of his, past promotions. You know, Lou DiBella is out there fucking working with, like, a porn star next to him and offering, like, free fucking tire rotations and shit like that if you buy tickets to Sergio Martinez's fight. You know what I mean? Like, so it's very clear that he's sellable, but not that sellable, and not really in New York City where they've tried to sell him numerous times. I don't know why. Regardless,
well,
so Miguel Cotto is pulling a bulk of this. Well, I mean, Miguel Cotto is pulling the bulk of this promotion, and so
yeah.
For Sergio right. Martinez to be you know, just acting like a douchebag. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there was some instance of disrespect between them or something that's legitimate. Maybe, but I don't know. He sure seems to come off like a whining little fucking cunt.
Yeah. I mean, when he...
Sorry,
you know, he wasn't,
I whipped out the C word, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, and you... Thankfully, you used it on a male. So it's not...
Yeah, no. My mom would call
in
and fucking slap me if I said it about a female.
It is weird, man, that Sergio is, like, making this, like, this personal vendetta. And I'd actually read some comments from him, like, a year or two ago, before the Cotto fight was even mentioned, where he was just bashing Miguel Cotto and over the same reason, like saying that he like snubbed him one time in person. And I was like, oh, that's weird. Like someone had tweeted that a while ago. But so I guess I believe that part of it, but I don't know. You know, and I do think Sergio's had some unfair backlash too in general. I mean, I don't know what more people, as far as fighting style, I mean, you know, getting up off the deck against a few different guys, but especially against Chavez in that 12th round and kind of standing toe-to-toe with, you know, a younger, I mean, Sergio's almost 40, and Chavez, you know, a guy in his 20s who outweighs him by 20 pounds and just slugging it out for the last 45 seconds. And some people have said, well, you know, he didn't have a choice. Well, yeah, you can always take a knee. You can always take the loss, you know, and I think Martinez is a proud champion, and he's had an exciting style, and he's had a really good run, and I have appreciated him, you know. But, yeah, his attitude in this leading in the fight, I think it has rubbed some people the wrong way, even more than he normally does. And I think it does kind of go back to that, you know, if Cotto had his choice, Cotto could have fought a ton of different opponents, and they all would have been high-profile fights. I mean, he is the money guy. He is the one that's going to sell out the arena. And I think it's giving Martinez this platform and this opportunity is huge. You know, I don't think Martinez was deserved. I mean, against Chavez, yeah, Martinez deserved that fight. I mean, Chavez was, like, screwing around in the same belt, took the belt that Martinez rightfully won, the same weight class. And, you know, I give Chavez credit for taking the fight, but Martinez deserved that fight. You know, that's a middleweight. Cotto didn't need to do this. He doesn't need to go to middle. It's not like something that, like, Sergio is entitled to this, you know. Not at all. He's lucky that a real pay-per-view caliber opponent, one of the most popular fighters in the sport, and a guy who's going to be a pretty substantial underdog to him, is giving him this chance, you know. And so I think that that's part of why his attitude is kind of like, okay, the guy dicked
well,
you
yeah.
like 8 years ago from conference. Just let it go. You know, he's giving you a fucking huge pay-per-view. Just act with honor. I mean, Miguel Cotto is basically been an honorable fighter, you know, and he's been the victim of some kind of unsavory tactics. I mean, you saw the iPad, Patrick.
What's that?
You saw the iPad and the 24/7 margarita where he's like showing the loaded glove.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like Cotto, like, yeah, he's a man of few words, but he's like kind of an honorable dude, so just like respect that. You know what I mean? I almost feel like Martinez was giving Chavez Jr. more respect.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, you know, it's I can see kind of like I could see somebody not really liking Cotto too, and Cotto kind of coming off like a dick himself. I could see that. You know, I'm personally a Cotto fan, but I could also see how somebody could not like him and stuff like that. You know, and he did kind of come off whiny too for the Margarito rematch. And, you know, there, of course, there was the great Margarito quote, like, oh, Cotto, how he cries. You know, that shit was great. But at the same time,
yeah.
You know, I do think that it's a lot of how he acts comes off as a little bit more stoic than anything else. So, I mean, yeah, I think that he probably is deserving of a little bit more respect. But the question for me is if Miguel Cotto were to somehow pull this win out of his ass, which I am definitely not expecting, you know, if anybody's going to be pulling something out of their ass, it's going to be Sergio Martinez. Pause. But basically,
or putting something into his ass.
Well, if he puts it in, it's got to come out somehow. So
it must. Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, it's Newton's law of putting shit in your ass. So basically, I'm a fucking idiot. So basically, if Miguel Cotto does somehow pull this win out, then what's next? And my fear is that what's next is a Floyd Mayweather rematch for the middleweight title. That shit is fucking keeping me up nights, James.
That's a lot of fears, but I don't know. I just hope that if it happens, I really hope that Cotto insists on it being at the full 160. I don't even know if it would be that much of an advantage, but just to make it more legit, I guess.
Get everything out of it. Why not? I mean, if that's what's gonna, you know, if that's what's gonna fucking happen, then get everything out of it you can.
Well, I think it's problematic that, like, we've got a clear number one contender in Golovkin at middleweight who should be challenging for the real championship. And if Cotto wins it, I think Golovkin has no chance of fighting for that thing, no matter where it ends up, you know. But if Martinez wins it, I could see Sergio actually take fighting Golovkin. And, you know, I could also see Sergio basically just, like, retiring or something and it becoming vacant. And then I think Golovkin would have a better chance because, you know, Golovkin and a guy like Gil or Soleiman or something, you could actually make a new number one versus number two. But if Cotto wins that legit championship, it's gone. You know, it'll be Canelo probably who ends up fighting for it.
Yeah. Somebody that I don't want to see fighting for the middleweight title, it will be, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, that would kind of suck, but it would also be an awesome accomplishment for him to do it, so you'd be happy for him in the moment.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yes.
Canelo Cotto for the middleweight championship, it's a huge fight. It's just that there's an elephant in the room, a Kazakhstani dude who respects box.
And at the end of it, and
championship fight without him is kind of fucked up with between and what would be basically between two junior middleweights. But
at the end of the day, all Miguel Cotto and all Canelo are good boys. That's it, dude. At the end of the day, that's all they are.
Pretty sure Golovkin knocks them both out in the same night.
With the same punch.
I'm thinking Golovkin would knock Cotto out in about three rounds, and then he would have 12 left to fight Canelo if he needed to go the distance. We see how much of a beating Canelo could take. But but you know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's the worst case scenario. But what's going to conveniently happen, though, is Golovkin will probably move up to 168, so at that point it'll be, And outside of Golovkin, I'm fine with it. I mean, he really has established himself as, I think, the best guy there. And, he'll fight Daniel Gill, and we'll see what happens there, but I expect there'll be another huge knockout, so. But what do you think, man?
Well, I'd like to see Martin Murray and Peter Quillen, somewhere in the mix there. I'm not super high on Peter Quillen myself, but those are two guys that I think should be among, the upper echelon at middleweight. But regardless,
and everyone that we named would be ranked higher at middleweight than whoever ends up fighting Miguel Cotto if Cotto wins.
Probably.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, probably.
It's not going to be any of those guys. In fact, I can almost guarantee you it will be Canelo. And it'll be hard for us to argue because that's a huge, huge money fight. And it actually would be a really good fight. If Cotto's got enough to beat Martinez, even Martinez with no legs, he's going to deserve another huge fight.
And that's a really important element that you bring up, too, is that, if somehow Miguel Cotto winds up beating Sergio Martinez, it legitimately, then that's, number one, a really big win for Miguel Cotto. And number two, perhaps if he does get that win, he deserves to fuck around and, have a big money-making defense that, isn't a legitimate middleweight fight or whatever. So, I think that's a good
Martin
point.
Would you like Martin Murray or someone like that if you were him? If you were on Team Cotto?
No.
I
think Martin Murray would be
Canelo,
him, to be honest.
Fight, man. Both those guys would make $20 million. I think the Canelo fight would be a huge pay-per-view, man. If he did 400 against Angulo.
And I think a Martin Murray would beat him. So I think Martin Murray would probably beat him. So, I don't think he would fight him.
I think he'd have a tough time with any of the real fresher big. And that's why I think if Martinez has any kind of legs that, he's probably going to be able to. I think he may end up starting just battering Miguel Cotto. But if Cotto can catch him early, Martinez has been down and he actually has looked a little bit hurt in the last couple fights. Whereas before it was like he was getting knocked down because he's got that unorthodox style and his balance. The last two fights, I mean, he was definitely hurt against Chavez, and I thought he even looked a little wobbly for a minute or two against Murray, even though he recovered. So you can't rule him out, but I think it's going to be a big difference than fighting Delvin Rodriguez.
There's no question.
It's really the Trout fight that I think is the bigger indictment, particularly for Martinez, because Martinez also has fast hands, but he's just better and he's at his best. I mean, he's a much bigger puncher, and I just think that the way that Trout's a really good fighter, but I think Martinez is much better. If Trout can fight, decisively on a night that I didn't think Cotto was necessarily having a bad night. I just thought a guy beat him. Yeah, I didn't think Cotto
was
like
for him too.
Yeah, but I mean, he had moments early in the fight. I mean, remember he was like Trout took the lead early, and then Cotto kind of came back, and it looked like he was going to be, and then Trout just really finished strong. So if point being that if he's fighting on even terms and losing against Trout, I think that even a diminished version of Martinez, you got to make him a pretty big favorite. I mean, just on size and power, and the hand speed is still going to be there. And even if he can't move around the ring as well, I don't know. But I think Cotto has always been an underrated boxer, and I think he's a guy who does have some power. And it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, it's one of those things where I'm favoring Martinez heavily, but I just have a feeling I wouldn't be surprised if Cotto does some crazy shit. And actually, if it ends up with Canelo Cotto for the middleweight championship, that's pretty huge. That'll be pretty huge. It won't be deserving, but it'll be awesome in its own right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the opened up possibilities of, you know, all of these other fights is kind of, it's just stuff that I'm not really in favor of, like with these kind of like novelty type of fights, but that's boxing. You know, whatever makes money, that's probably what's going to wind up being the case. So whatever, though. And if Miguel Cotto winds up getting the win, I would definitely congratulate the shit out of him, and I would be happy for him. But, you know, at the end of the day...
Tweet that picture you took with him in Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude, I will make that shit my wallpaper, and I don't mean my wallpaper on my computer. I mean my fucking wallpaper in my home, bro. But what's your pick, then? What's your final... What's going to happen?
I'm going to just play it safe and go with Martinez by, like, mid-late round TKO. I think, you know, Cotto's been more fragile, and, you know, he's been cut, he's been hurt. And I think Martinez is a genuinely big puncher. You know, even though, I mean, the stuff he was landing on Chavez Jr., he didn't look as good against Murray, obviously, but I'm thinking that may have been, like, kind of extenuating circumstances with that crazy rainstorm in Argentina and just the pressure fighting at home and the fight being moved up 2 hours. I don't know, you know, but if he's landing the kind of punches he was landing on Jr., I think he's going to stop Cotto in the middle rounds. Now, I don't think it's going to be that one-sided of a thing, but I think eventually he's going to just take over and hurt him and put him away. But I think there'll be moments. Yeah. Cotto will land some stuff that's going to make us, like, think for a second, like, whoa.
Yeah, and I do think that there – I tend to agree with you, and I think that there is an opening there. There is a potential opening there, you know, for Cotto to get some work done. I'm definitely not counting on him winning, but there's an opening there for him to do something, for him to work the body, for him to, you know, land a really big punch up top and kind of test Martinez's legs, because we don't know what shape they're going to be in, probably not great shape. So, you know, there's an opening there, but at the end of the day, I don't really like Miguel Cotto's lack of size. I don't really like the fact that he's been hurt by guys who are much, you know, who aren't punchers on the level of Sergio Martinez. So, yeah, as much as I'd really like to see Miguel Cotto win for a couple different reasons, mainly being that I'm a fan, I think it's probably going to have to be Martinez by about mid rounds, roughly, maybe like 6 or 7.
Yeah, well, it's tough when, like, one of Cotto's bigger assets here, or, like, argument you can make, is that he's in better condition. You know, like, he's less damaged. That's a tough argument to make about a guy who has, you know, had a couple of really brutal stoppages. And he's looked good against, he looked better against Mayweather than a lot of people thought, but you also have to remember stylistically, Mayweather's not really a puncher, and he's a guy who was going to box him for most of that fight. And so, you know, it would have been unlikely that he would have taken another kind of career beating the way he did against Margarito and Pacquiao. But Martinez, I think, is much more in that type of a camp. You know, he's explosive and he's a big puncher. And even, you know, even without the legs, I think he may be able to, you know, take him out. But then I can also see a scenario where Martinez's knee just, like, is completely fucked and his corner tries to throw in the towel and Arthur Mercanti Jr., like, picks it up and throws it back at him and refuses.
Yeah, that has happened before.
You can't rule that out.
It's fucking happened before. Yeah, it's happened before. Oh, man, I hope that whatever it is, I hope it doesn't wind up being a blowout, you know, because I think that's what a lot of people are expecting and that's what a lot of people are kind of having fear of.
Well,
and, you know, at this point,
I think it's almost guaranteed Cotto's going to have a really good, like, first and second round. Do you know what I mean? For history, like he did well against Pacquiao early. He did really well against Margarito in the first fight early. I think he's a good enough boxer that until they kind of settle in, I think he will have moments of success. But I do think eventually he's just going to get hit with like a big left hand that he doesn't see coming, and it's going to hurt him, and it's going to change the fight. And then I think he's going to be on the defensive and backpedaling, and Martinez is going to get more and more confident and eventually stop him, you know? But,
yeah.
Hey, the interesting thing, like two fights ago, this would have been considered a landslide. I mean, like it wouldn't have been, before Martinez fought Chavez and probably Murray too. I mean, nobody would have wanted to have seen this because we'd be worried about Cotto's health. I mean, that's how explosive and quick and just better that Martinez was at that point. But it's because we've seen Martinez take some damage. We've seen him, you know, look so-so. But like you pointed out, I mean, Martin Murray, in my mind, is a legitimate, like, top middleweight right behind the guy, right behind Martinez and Golovkin. Cotto, he's lost against the best in the weight class below that. You know, so we can't get that caught up on the mythology of, like, what a great fighter and a superstar that he's been for so long because, like, bottom line is he hasn't won those fights at the highest level in a while. And so you got to go with Martinez. I mean, I don't think there's any reason for anybody to pick Cotto other than just kind of like you're taking a big flyer that Martinez really physically has like nothing left.
Well, and I think that on top of that, like adding to Miguel Cotto's, you know, woes here in this potential matchup is that not only is it a case of, you know, him not being quite as quick, not being as big, not being as strong, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But on top of all of that, it's a bad style matchup for him, too. He's never really had an easy time with fighters who are capable of moving a lot, moving quickly, have good hands, quick hands, you know, decent beards, and can punch. That's just not a winning combination for anybody at middleweight, much less somebody coming up for, you know, much less somebody coming up from junior middleweight and not having fared super great there. So, yeah, he's got the deck stacked against him, which would make make him winning even more fucking badass. So, yeah, let's hope that, or at least I hope that happens. We'll see.
Well,
I know there are some people out there rooting for Sergio.
There are people who hate the fight because, you know, in any other division, I mean, it would be ridiculous to say, like, okay, well, hey, you fought against the best guy at 154, right, Mayweather? Oh, you lost, pretty wide decision. And then you fought against Austin Trout, one of the, you know, better contenders at 154, but you lost the decision. And then Trout lost to two other guys, you know, that are better fighters. So you're kind of like already, you know, there's four guys at 154 who are better than you, you know. And you get to step to the front of the line and fight the legitimate middleweight champion. You know, and this would be like, you know, really, you know, people I think would really be more upset about it, except that, of course, it's Cotto who has, like, the financial leverage. So it's really Cotto who's giving Martinez the fight, you know. And but, like, yeah, if somebody from middleweight who had come off two losses to, like, elite fighters was fighting Andre Ward, I mean, the piling on Andre Ward for taking that fight would just be absurd, you know? I guess you could make a parallel that it would be, like, Ward fighting Chavez Jr., right? Because Chavez Jr. has the economic pull. So.
Or some other type of hypothetical scenario, like Andre Ward making the legitimate light heavyweight champion move down to some type of catch weight or maybe even super middleweight and then, you know, knocking the shit out of him. So, you know, that's totally hypothetical.
It would be like that. But, no, I mean, I get where people are coming from with, like, shitting on this fight because I think, and a big part of it, too, is, again, so Gennady Golovkin. He's made himself such a, you know, just dramatic contender for Sergio's belt that it's like, He just deserves the fight. I mean, it's time. You know, he needs that fight. But then that's a big reason why it's like, oh, Cotto's getting the fuck, you know? Like, this guy's not even fighting. He's not fighting the best middleweight. He's fighting, like, the fifth best junior middleweight. But, you know, I mean, that's again, this is boxing. It's a sport and a business, right? And that's why Cotto's getting the fight. He's got the economic leverage, and this is what he wanted.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I'm kind of down on the fight. I've been down on the fight. But, you know, being realistic about it, it's not a small fight. It's not an insignificant fight. This is a fight that, you know, some people are looking forward to for a couple different reasons. It's interesting. The style matchup is kind of intriguing. But, yeah, it's basically Cotto flexing his drawing power, you know, getting the fight. So whether or not he wins, that's kind of what will determine whether or not this was all worth it. But he's going to be pocketing some good coin, for sure.
Yeah, and I respect it. I think it's good. I think it's a great move for him. I mean, if you have that power and you want to try to chase greatness, I mean, this is a great opportunity to, you know, enhance his legacy. And if he loses, it's like he got beat by the legitimate middleweight champion, and he's basically a career welterweight. So, no shame.
Nah, I don't think there's any shame in it. And it could still be, you know, Cotto Canelo could still be makeable after this. You know, Mayweather Cotto 2, you know, that's a little bit of a stretch. But as far as just making money and being a good fight, that could still, you know, be made after this too if he loses.
Okay.
Does it make a whole lot of sense? Nah, not really, but it could.
yeah, if Cotto doesn't get completely wiped out and he just has a couple good moments and acquits himself well, still loses, Canelo Cotto is still huge.
Yeah,
definitely.
For sure.
The only
no
way
question.
It's not is if Martinez like literally leaves nothing left of Cotto in the ring. And I think with Martinez's physical problems, it's probably not going to happen.
It, of course, you know, we're assuming that Canelo is going to beat Edislandi Lara. I know you are, because you fucking hate that guy. But, it's an assumption, though. It's an assumption.
All right, shit,
we'll
dude,
see.
I guess we should.
I know. You got to go. Well, let's okay. call it a show, and then we'll leave it at the hour and a half mark, so at least that way our buddy Andy Fruman can listen to this in his gym time at double speed. Because
yes.
I think that's his concern with our shows. In any event, yeah, let's end this. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We appreciate it. And hopefully the fight this weekend goes swimmingly. If you're looking to check James' stuff out, look at madlefthook.com. And if you're looking to follow me on queensberryrules.com, do so. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. And we'll see you guys next week. Take it easy.